You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist here on Radio Albion. It is the 8th of May, 2024, and you're in luck as this is Matthew Raphael Johnson, beloved by all, here today to talk about the ultimate nightmare of the regime and its power. And that is something that I've been talking about for decades. People are finally getting the picture here, the Sino-Russian alliance. Initially, I spoke of this relative to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, but that, at least in the press, was eclipsed by BRICS and now BRICS Plus. But the SCO is still extremely important as one of the first institutionalizations of this alliance. And there's been... Again, if many of you who've been following me a long time know that I've been mocking the regime's attempts through wishful thinking and make-believe news articles that these two are actually enemies. But of course, they're nothing of the kind. They're both land powers with that system and have been allied since the Tsarist era. Now, the history of the sea power... whether it be everything from Carthage to Venice to London, of course, is dominated by trade, deception, usury. But because so many of them have a Jewish foundation, they, when they become powerful, they tend to push too far. The land powers, Germany, Russia, China. And sometimes, in their arrogance, they go a little too far. They always push too far. And if they try to start something in a land power's home territory, they are very quickly outmatched. And their real strategy then is to, like in World War I, divide the land powers against each other, fomenting distrust and everything else. And of course, that's been the strategy here, although now it's more laughable than anything else. Land powers, unfortunately, in these forms of warfare end up bearing the brunt of the losses, bearing the brunt of the damage. Germany, in trying to blunt the force of Stalin's war machine in 1941, sacrificed itself, playing right into the hands of the USA. So Marxism and liberalism then divided the world between them. The U.S., of course, emerged from this as a colonial power, however indirect it may be, and this largely make-believe Cold War. But this empire, in British too, was indirect. Direct control came from things like the Rothschild Bank. Now, there was an attempt when the Soviet Union existed to divide those two. Trade with both, even during Mao's worst genocide, was never interrupted. Although one side tended to be favored at the expense of the other. But if the two, during the Cold War, were to be aligned, that would be a ginormous empire. And it didn't matter what ideology it had. It had to be fought one way or the other. So they attempted to split this, which didn't take much. And Sino-Soviet relations were damaged right up until the very end. But today you don't really have diplomats anymore. You don't have people with any kind of knowledge You just have the ignoramuses making threats on behalf, usually, of the Jewish bourgeoisie, which, as a few others have said, that might work against smaller countries. But you have, you know, I've talked about the psychological makeup of the leaders of the regime. At this point, has, you know, it's not just they're incorrect, but they're attempting to remake the world according to their design, intellectually, forcing their categories onto the world, believing that that's really how it is. It's simple delusion. And it's delusional enough to think that these kind of tactics can work against two actual superpowers, two of them. The U.S. is a non-industrialized power. It is not a superpower. And I mentioned, I don't remember, last week, I guess, Blinken's a ridiculous trip. And he, of course, was sent packing. It was last year that the unelected Biden administration tried to send Henry Kissinger to do what he did before, decades earlier, but it failed. And it shows you how desperate the regime has become. Now, I've been talking about this for at least 20 years, but this no limits partnership is something that's brought about by, of course, their individual self-interest as well as very obvious commonalities. And the propaganda machine, if you recall what I did in North Korea, and I think I published that article on my Patreon, trying to invent stories that North Korea and China are at loggerheads. And that's just wishful thinking. It wasn't true. But I linked maybe 10 articles that purport these are opponents, and of course they're not. The difference is that Putin and Xi are actual sovereign leaders. They're not functionaries of capital. And they maintain their promises, unlike the regime. The economic connections, this Sino-Russian alliance, have grown far faster than even they had initially predicted. I mean, the bilateral trade is $300 billion a year, increasing by, the last one was 25%. The target was $200 billion. And, of course, the U.S. not being able to do much about this is trying to destroy it. And one of the ways they're doing that, I mean, this is a country to which the U.S. owes huge amounts of money in the trillions. So for anybody to go over there swaggering and making demands is laughable. And it's not just an error, it's layers of error, layers of delusion. And the claim that Blinken made was, who, by the way, calls himself an Israeli, the dual-use good. See, because he actually believes that Russia needs assistance in its military production, when, of course, it's the U.S. that needs that kind of assistance. And while China has no need to ship weaponry there, the U.S. accuses it of sending it things like computer components that might be able to be used in a military capacity. And, of course, they've been dismissed by anyone who knows anything. Russia is outproducing the U.S. and NATO put together. There's no assistance necessary, and it's just simple projection, since the U.S. is running out of everything. And it doesn't mean much. The U.S. is in no position to make demands. Many have noticed, and I'm citing an article here on Chinese naval doctrine. If you're a subscriber to Eurasian Naval Insight, which I am, you can follow the shift in Chinese naval policy. Growing its navy, which is now far larger than the U.S., at least as modern, nullifies everything that the U.S. tried to say, that there is this rivalry between Moscow and Beijing, which of course doesn't exist. That would be great for them. It's like getting Russia and Germany to fight for World War I. And the claim that I've read for at least 15 years, if not longer, is that the Chinese want to colonize Siberia. And I could cite, 10, 15 articles just recently where that's a claim. And yet if that were the case, China wouldn't be rebuilding this hyper-modern navy as, again, if you're a subscriber to my Patreon, you could find my paper on the actual physical and mental condition of the U.S. Navy. But of course, what they're saying is false. The Chinese have drastically, in fact, reduced its land forces and rather diverted funds to its navy, especially aircraft carriers and much larger ships. Obviously, they're not going to be used against Siberia. Although again, the Western elite, knowing nothing about the area, may think that somehow Siberia is, a war for it can be fought on the sea. But clearly it shows what the Chinese think its main threat is. The Fuyan on May 1st was sailed for the first time, its first supercarrier, 90,000 tons, huge landmark achievement done with the Russians. And despite the fact that they already have the Dong 9, these carrier buster missiles, they're building their own fleet. So they have three total. And by the early 2030s, they'll have six. And this is a shift in strategy. The U.S. is falling behind and falling apart and doesn't have the money, the resources, the men, the manpower, doesn't have anything to ever catch up again. But the attempt to make the two powers hate each other does nothing except increase their level of cooperation. Their immense domestic industrial capacity combined is far greater than anything that the U.S. could muster, especially since it's not an industrialized economy. It has offshored most of its heavy industry. And, of course, the other reason that they're very close is that they're coordinating their efforts against the regime, liberal aggression. The regime has surrounded China, really both countries, but China especially, with missiles, hostile satellite states, every kind of system you can imagine. But under BRICS and the SCO, the concept of this partnership is one of ethnic nationalism. It's respective of national interests. It's now the new blueprint for diplomacy. And because it's based on non-interference and multipolarity, as the Belt and Road is as well, which is now a third organization, and the U.S. can't do anything about it. But trying to place sanctions on a country that the U.S. is dependent upon and owes ridiculous amounts of money to just shows you the level of delusion that you have from people like Anthony Blinken and those who pay for them. Now, in very good news, and this shouldn't surprise anybody, and this has come up on this show before, but the Russian military, along with the Chinese, said that it's going to consider foreign satellites legitimate targets, especially if they're engaged in providing militarily viable information, which of course they are. The Associated Press, although unreliable, just a few days ago, this warning was reiterated, and Russia sent a warning to the U.S. that it will target Western commercial satellites, and that came from the Russian Foreign Ministry's Arms Control Department, a guy named Konstantin Voronstov, and he talked about a quasi-civilian infrastructure. Well, it doesn't matter if it's private or public. If it has a military use, then it's a legitimate target. Boeing would be a legitimate target. General Electric would be a legitimate target no matter what. I mean, they're the heart of the industrial complex, military-industrial complex. Elon Musk, who has a fame that he does not deserve, his SpaceX is involved in the war. The Starlink services are, of course, paid for by American tax dollars in service to Kiev. And the thing that there's no Pentagon influence, most of these huge corporations get subsidies. There's clearly a connection between the Starlink system on the one hand and the U.S. military on the other, not to mention the colonial possession in Kiev. And it doesn't matter whether it's publicly funded by the Pentagon or not. If it's involved in transferring this information, then the members of the SCO are going to destroy it. Now, SpaceX claims that it can't sustain these operations indefinitely. They're very high costs, but that's not their biggest problem. They're going to be targeted, and we can only hope. Now, the revolutionaries in Kiev say that Starlink is absolutely essential. It's probably their only real unified command and control system. And so they're obviously legitimate targets for attacks. You know, the Planet Labs, Earth Observation Satellites, Maxar, all these others. And these are put in service of Kiev. And it's not the first time that the Russians have warned on this. The fact that they're non-military doesn't mean anything. They're targeted, and they should be targeted. But who owns them is completely irrelevant. The U.S. is pursuing, and the foreign ministry said, this thoughtless escalation. And the more it's drawn into supporting this dying regime, and they will continue to provoke it, not just in on land, in the air, but also now in space. And the Chinese have said the same thing over Taiwan. The Chinese military is already engaged, along with the Russian, with anti-satellite simulations to test its capabilities. This is why the Space Force was created in the U.S. The Asia Times, not that long ago, said that the Chinese had developed anti-satellite simulations, testing its capacity, using nuclear weapons to destroy near-Earth orbit satellites, which, of course, is meant to knock out multiple satellites, especially if they're used to support military operations. There's something called the Northwest Institute of Nuclear Technology, which is owned by the Chinese Army, has developed a model which can evaluate the use of nuclear weapons specifically tailored for anti-satellite tasks at different altitudes and different yields with tremendous accuracy. So they had a simulation showing a 10 megaton warhead can destroy satellites within a certain area if it's detonated over roughly 60 miles. It'll turn air molecules into this pear-shaped cloud of radioactive particles that then would cause failures and damage to everything around it. And that was published in a journal called Nuclear Techniques, which is one of the dominant journals in that field. So it's not an accident that the Space Force, which is only a few years old, was founded, and that SpaceX and companies like that are very much a part of this operation, whether they want to be or not. So much of that research has been financed by the Pentagon. It makes anything connected with that fair game. So now, both countries, China and Russia, have made huge investments in their own version of the Space Force, or the Rocket Force in China. Russians already have directed energy weapons capable of targeting satellites in orbit. And the Chinese have these, right at the moment, very secretive plans for the space planes, which are nearing completion. Anti-satellite missiles, which they have, you know, they've been tested, and they've hit targets in space with ease. No one wants the militarization of space, but the U.S. has demanded it. The U.S. has pulled out of every arms limitation treaty that it has ever signed in over the last 50 years. And so Space Force was founded to now fill that gap. So connected to that is started really a few months ago, really November of 2023. These aren't directly related to the satellite system, but they're indirectly related. In the Asia-Pacific region, you have increasingly sophisticated missile systems being used in simulations and exercises in the Pacific. Actually, exercises for this year, which has the purpose to deter China from invading Taiwan, which is an absurd purpose. There is no threat of that happening. And again, it's just more projection from the U.S. Essentially, what they want to do is they want to fire a land-based version of the Tomahawk medium range. Some of these have been sent to the Philippines already. And some, or so it's been said, are in Taiwan, or on Taiwan, I should say. But that hasn't been verified as of right now. And this is the Typhon system, which is in the Philippines presently. It's a land-based medium-range missile system, and it's never been used in these kind of exercises in the Far East. They have the super. I mean, the Tomahawk is subsonic, but the SM-6 is supersonic, and it has numerous purposes as a missile. And this is part of the U.S. Navy, the Aegis system, the combined SAM, and of course the ABM system. They could use this against ships as well, connected to the Chinese Navy. So the SM-6 gives it this capability. It can hit both airborne and surface targets. It could also be used on land for various, you know, supporting infantry. The claim is that they're going to permanently base this in what they call China's backyard. And this is just an escalation of their aggression. This comes from the, General Charles Flynn, the U.S. Army Pacific Command. And there's at least one battery in the Philippines. It came out of the Joint Base Lewis McChord, Washington State. We used to call it just McChord, assigned to the 1st Multi-Domain Task Force. And I've seen footage of the trailer-based, you know, launcher on the Globemaster transport aircraft, and then actually being unloaded in the Philippines. So you have four launchers, mobile command post, and other vehicles. They come from the MK-41 vertical launch system, or VLS. Now, this is significant because this stuff was banned, or part of it was banned, in the INF Treaty. The U.S. pulled out of it unilaterally, so it forced Russia to respond by testing its own intermediate-range missiles, which they are far ahead, as well as the Chinese, of the U.S. Now, it's claimed that its worst feature, it can fire purely offensive missiles like the Tomahawk, but no one knows what missiles they're going to use at the moment. They're refusing on-site inspections in Eastern Europe and elsewhere, so that means the Russians had to create countermeasures, and that's where its new generation of hypersonic missiles came from. And now that these Western missiles have been deployed on land, it's changed things. The point of the Typhon system, by their own description, is that it's used against high-value targets, air defense assets, command and control regions. As far as I know, it's based on Luzon in the Philippines, on the island, meant to be able to reach southern and southeastern China. Hence used in any kind of future South China Sea operation. And it also explains why the U.S. is involved in manipulating elections in the Philippines. And there's been plenty of countries that's refused outright to allow the deployment of this system. That doesn't seem to matter, though. The Marine Corps has their own on their different platform, the light tactical vehicle, 4x4. But, you know, in a few years ago, the West or the U.S. reactivated the 56th Artillery Command, which had been disbanded given the nature of the treaties, which the U.S. has ripped up. So now they've been reactivated with forward deployed Typhon systems, like the Dark Eagle hypersonic, which hasn't been delivered yet. They're struggling with that in development, and even the Pershing and Pershing II nuclear weapons. So the broader point here is that the point is to antagonize both actual superpowers, taking pride in the fact that this is a threat that these two powers can't ignore. Now, Russia and China just so happen to have superior missile technologies today, especially in the hypersonic areas. We've mentioned this before, and the regime seems ignorant about this because they still project this image that these are third world countries. Of course, the only third world country now is the U.S. Even the North Koreans have overtaken the U.S. in this respect. So, but what's China's stance in all of this? As this is all going on, as Blinken is going over there and making threats, the center of Chinese policy. It actually goes back to 1953, and it's called the Five Principles of Peaceful Coexistence. Now, Blinken has just come back from Beijing, and these five principles, I think we've mentioned this before. The first and dominant one is mutual respect for sovereignty and territorial integrity, which in and of itself is a declaration of war against the regime. Of course, mutual non-aggression, which is implied by the first one, and equally implied is the non-interference in each other's internal or external affairs. And equality among countries of different sizes and forms of power, based itself on mutual benefit, and this is supposed to lead eventually to some version of peaceful coexistence. Now, the last Party Congress in China, it's been very clear. Xi and his group want to see a stable relationship with the U.S. Sustainability, stability, health. They want mutual cooperation. They want dialogue and managing these differences. But China's not an empire, and it could take positions like this. Official U.S. policy, of course, is the very opposite of that. These missile systems, Typhoon and others, the point is to surround China with high-tech, not just military bases, but high-tech weaponry, with the claim that war is inevitable because the Chinese are going to invade Taiwan, which is a myth that I think they tell themselves enough times to actually believe it's true. But Xi, back last month, in fact, met with former president of Taiwan, Ma Ying-jeou, and they said, you know, the majority, and I've talked about this before too, majority of those on Taiwan don't want to be independent and certainly don't want war with the mainland and trust the mainland more than they do the U.S. So this meeting with the former president was kind of a big deal. And they both signed a missive saying that a war would be absolutely an unbearable burden for the Chinese nation. The very fact that they're referring to both of them as part of one nation in this, in fact, I ran the numbers for the different political parties on Taiwan and their positions on this, and it's a decidedly minority position that wants any kind of independence or war with China, since their economies, especially on the island, are heavily intertwined. Now, even of greater significance is that the Chinese have backed, and this is why Blinken went over there, Chinese have backed the war against Kiev, since they see a parallel development in Taiwan and elsewhere. The Chinese have offered to negotiate a peace, maybe even giving the absolutely unpopular, unelected president of Ukraine an exit strategy, maybe even the ability to save face, but the U.S. rejected it. He has no independence. He is a colonial administrator with no political experience whatsoever. He's the perfect person for this. So when it was offered to Kiev, the U.S. stepped in and said, no, we're not doing this. So Blinken went to meet with Wang Yi, and essentially his agenda, and I think I've mentioned this, was it last week, increasingly pressuring China to cut off their existing trade agreements with Russia. A dual-use concept, as I mentioned before, that could be anything. But the Washington Post, which is a CIA conduit, stated that, it was April 26th, actually, they said that things like machine tools, drone parts, semiconductors, and all the rest, and they believe that this is key to the Kremlin's war in Ukraine, which is, you know, CIA propaganda, and these are layers of errors and delusions. Russia easily outproduces the U.S., let alone Russia and China together. Having offshored their industrial capacity, the U.S. is not a industrialized country. They have access to it, but it's for profit and usually beyond the borders of the United States. So somehow a country, a dying empire that owes China trillions of dollars, somehow can go over there and begin making demands. The TikTok issue. You know, Blinken can go over there and demand that China either sell this huge company to a non-Chinese company within a few months or have it banned entirely, And then actually a few hours later, just having tried to ban a Chinese company from doing business in the U.S., Blinken goes to China and demands a level playing field for American businesses in China. Within hours of each other, this can happen. And these people don't see a problem. They don't see, it's not even a double standard, it's a delusion that those two things are consistent. And that's why there has to be a psychological analysis of some of this, not just a simple political or historical one. But it's very typical. It's an indefensible position. And I think it was the 29th of April, the foreign ministry in China said, and they're using diplomatic language, demanding that the U.S. respect China's core interests and major concern, not to implement any of these demands. But China will take strong and resolute measures to safeguard our sovereignty, security, and development interests. Of course, that's how diplomats speak. It's much harsher than that. But the foreign ministry in China had confronted Blinken over all of them. That they're being condemned for not putting sanctions on Russia during this war while the Chinese have been involved in trying to develop a negotiated peace there. The U.S., of course, has the exact opposite role as, you know, the main instigator. So when China gets threatened somehow by this delusional man, delusional system, Chinese foreign ministry said China's right to normal trade and economic exchanges with countries in the world, including Russia, on the basis of equality and mutual benefit should not be interfered with or disrupted. The U.S. keeps pouring munitions into Ukraine while blaming our normal trade with Russia. It's pretty clear who exactly is fueling the flame and aggravating the crisis. So it's comments like this and Blinken's own extreme arrogance that tie all of these stories together, militarily, economically, and diplomatically. So here's what Blinken said, and it shows you the level of ignorance. And the first line, Russia would struggle to sustain its war in Ukraine without China's support, which is laughable. And he says, fueling Russia's industrial base not only threatens Ukrainian security, it threatens European security. Beijing cannot achieve better relations with Europe while supporting the greatest threat to European security since the end of the Cold War. And then he issued his threat. He said, in our discussions today, I made it clear that if China does not address this problem, we will. Now, this kind of rhetoric comes straight out of the Central Intelligence Agency. The U.S. has been the aggressor, has been the financier of this warfare. It's the U.S., of course, that struggles with its military production, while Russia does not. It's yet another form of projection. The U.S. created the Kievan army that was slated to invade New Russia or Eastern Ukraine in, you know, spring of 22 before Russia preemptively destroyed it. And Putin has shown zero interest in war with anyone unless that place created a clear threat, and the Ukrainian army certainly did. Now, of course, Ukraine is depopulated and of fourth world status. So these fictional, largely fictional enemies are projections of the disordered mind of the elite in the West. This unilateral exceptionalism, which comes from this very loud Jewish arrogance and pretending that the U.S., in service to it, is the world's only superpower or even a superpower at all. Getting their two opponents to fight one another and threatening both at the same time somehow is something that they have the ability or the right to do. Shows you what we're dealing with here. We're not dealing with rational people. The U.S. has very little power and authority in the world. It's in a panic state. The U.S. is now backed into a corner, fighting losing wars on three separate fronts, and at losing them all as its economy teeters on the brink of pure chaos. Some of you may have heard the exchange between Lloyd Austin and Matt Gaetz of Florida, congressman from Florida, in his testimony, where, you know, there's this beachhead pier in Gaza under the, you know, ridiculous humanitarian excuse, and that he was confronted saying that, well, the U.S. then becomes targets, legitimate targets, and they're going to draw fire. And then the Associated Press on April 26th said that the gunfire has already been exchanged between the U.S. and the Arabs and Gaza. That's already occurred. So you have this list of defeats in Syria, Iraq, Ukraine, and now Gaza, during an election year, no less. This humiliation, the regime that controls Biden is growing more desperate, and the reality of its position is leaking into its subconscious, but not its conscious mind. U.S. interventionism has a miserable record. It's lost it. Vietnam, Iraq, Syria, Libya, Somalia, Afghanistan, and of course now Ukraine and Gaza, losing all of its authority in the process. You know, stealing assets, ripping up treaties. But this aggression has failed everywhere. It's impoverished and traumatized any country that might threaten Israel or liberalism in general. And as Joachim Agopian says, the U.S. is now the laughingstock pariah of the world, neither respected nor feared. The point is, of course, to provoke and manipulate wars on three fronts, each presenting zero, absolutely zero threat to national security, while deliberately opening the border with Mexico, which actually is a threat to national security. The point, of course, is to replace white America with cheap labor that can then be herded to the polls and just like during Reconstruction, to vote for the regime's official candidate. But Blinken is simply posing, speaking for a paper tiger that truly believes, at least in his conscious mind, has the power to do this. But the harshness of the rhetoric comes from the subconscious mind, where they realize that they can't. But demanding that China disrupt its increasing trade relations with Russia over this, when it has absolutely no power or authority to do it, and speaking from the point of view of a non-industrialized country that's offshored all of its capacity, dealing with two powers that are completely industrialized locally, and much of it is state-owned. Now, the Chinese are going to take this as something to smile at, but it's still provocative. Blinken is a weasel. It's this failed attempt to intimidate the Chinese. What the world knows, I don't care what weapon systems they send to the Philippines or elsewhere, it's the U.S. and NATO that are the weak powers here, compared to especially the Russian combat strength and combat readiness. So when all of this failed, as all these military operations were going on, Blinken pretended that this was all, you know, these two-day meetings were productive and helpful, not reducing tensions. And Wang Yi, you know, paid lip service to a lot of this. But he did say that the negative factors in this relationship are increasing and building up, and the relationship is facing many disruptions. So, again, using diplomatic language, the Chinese aren't buying the American demand, the American position. China has overtaken the U.S. in every area that matters. And the growing conflicts that the West is, or the regime is engaging in, using the U.S. for the most part, or not even if it was just one, the U.S. is incapable of winning even at one front. But as they claim that they support the One China policy, they sent $8 billion more dollars to Taiwan that they don't have, and surrounding areas, of course, with very sophisticated weapon systems, attempting to do everything in their power to provoke the Chinese into doing something. And that economic sanctions, that the U.S. is in any position here. I mean, the two-way trade this year so far has been $240 billion against all Western forecasts. The sanctions have been wonderful since, as the Western companies have left this huge market, local companies have have taken over. Even small businesses. Putting millions more to work, creating a labor shortage, in fact. And a whole new crop of actual legitimate entrepreneurs to take over where the U.S. has been forced to leave. Everything from automotives to media, retail, and all the rest of it. This does nothing more than increase relations with China and India, which is a very good piece of news overall. But this is the level of psychological delusion that we're dealing with. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.